You ever wonder if your routine is actually working or if you're just hoping it is? The Hume Band gives you real answers. It tracks your body 24/7, heart rate, sleep stages, recovery, stress, even blood oxygen, so you can see exactly how your habits impact your health. Not just steps, real data. You'll start to notice patterns, like how a bad night of sleep affects your recovery or how stress is holding you back. And instead of guessing what to fix, the app gives you clear, personalized insights based on your data, so you can stop second-guessing and start making smarter decisions for your body. Visit HumeHealth.com to get the Hume Band today.
Welcome back, Big Trouble, little podcast. Hey, I'm Andy.
I'm Chaz, and returned.
I'm Joe Dubs.
I'm Zach.
This is episode 331. We're talking about Midnight Run, a movie that was selected for us by an artificial intelligence. Was it ChatGPT? Which one was it?
The ChatGPT. Yep.
Okay.
The free version, because I'm a peasant.
That's right. I mean, that makes sense to me. We had it select a list of movies, and now we're choosing from that list. And this was Chaz's pick, sort of. I mean, it was kind of, we talked through it, and then it ended up being counted as his pick. But that's okay, because it's a pretty cool movie. Chaz, tell us about Midnight Run and why it was picked.
Well, we went through our words. I don't remember everyone's combination of words we used.
When I got
we
it.
Live. If you want to throw this up.
But. Like buddy comedy. I said thought-provoking, which Midnight Run isn't, but whatever.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think that's the thing, is it's so hard to get all four. And to be fair, I threw a wild card word out there. Being dumb.
The keywords we chose was thought-provoking, epic, a vibe, and a buddy cop movie.
All right. I mean, okay, I'll have to be on the defensive here for this one. This definitely hit buddy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like that's 80% of what it did.
I think it hit a vibe. It has a very specific vibe. Maybe not one that clicks with everyone, but
insofar as it came out in the late 80s, yeah.
This
very, very super 80s movie.
This movie very much feels like just right within the bosom of the mid to late 80s in terms of just a popcorn flick that I'm going to go see. I felt like I watched like Beverly Hills Cop meets Planes, Trains, and Automobiles in a lesser
Mary
fashion.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. I kept thinking about that movie.
Yeah.
In my letterbox review, I mixed the movie Vacation with U.S. Marshals. That's my mix.
Oh, okay. That's also perfect. Yeah. So, they found a way to do that whole, again, mismatched buddy pairing, like, oh no, they have to coexist, which apparently is now a wrestling trope. But anyway, it's funny. I've always wanted to watch this movie too. I've never watched it, and not really any reason that I have or haven't, but just haven't watched it, and glad I have now. I don't know. I mean, how did you guys feel about the movie overall? I mean, the plot in itself is again, it's not thought provoking. I feel like that is, if there's any one of the things that didn't hit, it is definitely not thought provoking. Nor is it really an epic. It's just this story of a guy who used to be a cop, but is now a bounty hunter and ends up maybe getting a good score that can get him out of the business he's in. And he's a little hard boiled to say the least, but this quirky guy that he has to go capture ends up kind of changing his tune a little by the end of the movie, and they go on weird shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
There's mafia. You know, there's like the classic like mafia boss who just had it up to here with everyone, and he has the two goons that work for him who fuck everything up.
I mean, like the part where he's like, "I'm talking to Mara number one. Where's Mara number two? Put him on the line."
Like, yeah, just a lot of tropes that are repeated. This movie's not doing anything original by any means. But yeah, I don't know. I watched this mostly, I did watch this completely at work. I thought for some reason I maybe didn't finish it, but no, I watched it all at work, mostly in one go. And I don't know. I enjoyed myself a bit. I don't think there was any time that I was like, oh, this is dragging on. When is this going to end?
I did. I mean, there was parts where I was like, oh, this is funny. Like, there's certain parts, like when I already forgot his name, and I wrote it in my review. Charles Grodin's character,
I'm just gonna say the Duke.
So the Duke, like when he's on the airplane freaking out. I also love that we don't know if he actually is freaking out or tricking, you know, De Niro's character. But I also like him stealing the fucking plane and passing out and stuff. Like, I thought that was fucking funny. There was parts where him, the Duke, and De Niro, like, kind of bounce off of each other, but I felt like there was such a chemistry lost. Like, the Duke's character, I didn't end up liking him until literally the end of the movie. Because it just felt like he was there, and that's it.
I don't know. I thought the movie was carried along by their chemistry almost more than anything. Like,
yeah, I agree.
Like, if it was just one of them doing stuff and the other guy wasn't playing off of them, I don't think the movie would be as entertaining. Like, a lot of the more entertaining moments in the movie are just the two of them not having a conversation, like in a car or in a railroad car or something like that. I like that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does shine through, but I don't know if it's the actor or the writing. It just felt very meh. Like,
is he a famous actor?
Have I
seen him in anything?
I thought I seen him in something, but he's just, his face looks similar to the guy from Galaxy Quest, the one in Aliens. I thought it was him, but it wasn't.
But yeah, I didn't recognize him. I was like, is this like his breakout role or what the hell? If you go to IMDb, this is his most popular movie, so maybe.
Mm-hmm. And the whole counterfeit part where they go in to get money from that bar and stuff. And he's like, I'm an FBI, and these are counterfeit.
I know what I know him from now. It took me a second. He's the dad in Beethoven.
Hey, I haven't seen that movie since I was like 8. So.
I know. I was thinking, like, what do I know him from? That's it.
He's also in The Great Muppet Caper.
Oh, well, I've seen that too. So, okay, I guess I've seen him around.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, De Niro is just being De Niro, right? Like, everything that he does, he's very like, oh, I'm talking like an Italian mob here, you know, that stuff.
Man, and, I'm walking here.
Yeah, and
it's weird for him to play a squeaky clean hero. Like, I mean, he's a dick, and he's violent, and he kills some people when he blows up a helicopter, and they just kind of don't talk about it. But he's not like a villain. He's not a mobster. He's not, you know, a bank robber or anything. He's, you know, it's a little weird. It's a little weird seeing him like that. But I don't know. He pulls it off, I thought, sort of. I mean, it's not like, oh, give this man an Oscar. But, you know, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it sucks. I just think that they didn't come off great together. I think if De Niro, because we've seen De Niro in other comedies, and it's, like, hilarious, funny. These where I was just like, huh. Maybe it's just the comedy just didn't hit with me. Because De Niro does this thing where he's like, the guy will say something. He'd be like, did you put the toilet seat up? And then he would repeat it. Did I put the toilet seat up? It's like, that was like every conversation that happened in that movie. And I was just annoyed by that.
No, I don't know. Maybe I got a different thing from it. I will say one thing with how I watched the film. I did not watch it all sitting in one go. Like, most of the film was finished that way, but I did have to get up and go and like work a few times. So like there was like little cuts in between, and maybe that breakup was enough to separate any stagnation. But I wanted to get back to watching what I was watching. It was entertaining enough. I felt like they skirted this line of making Grodin like quirky enough that it's like, okay, we got this guy with Asperger's that's just that happened to fall into the wrong crowd, and And then later they like make it seem like, okay, was he acting like he had something wrong with him so that De Niro would like be soft on him and maybe that would help him get away. But I still couldn't quite figure that out, because the end he does change a little bit. He is a little more just normal, I guess, or another way to put it. Like, he acts quirkier at the beginning of the film, but it almost feels like he does that as a way to maybe try to get away from De Niro. And then later he doesn't. But I thought the chemistry was still good. I feel like I got a completely different take from it. But again, to each their own. It doesn't mean right or wrong. Just I laughed at bits, and any bit where they were like getting ready to be caught by either the FBI or the mobsters, and then some clusterfuck would happen, especially when this guy, when Mosley would show up and find out he's a step behind. And just get so frustrated, because they'd be like, "Oh yeah, hey, don't worry, he's with Agent Mosley," and he's like, "I'm Mosley, goddammit!" Like, it's really funny.
Well, I love the bit with him stealing Marvin's fucking cigarettes. That was funny.
Oh yes, Marvin's
watch your cigarettes also around this guy.
Yeah, just you have like this other random bounty hunter that's shitty. I also just enjoyed how sleazy. The dude running the bail bondsman office.
Joey Pants. I fucking love him. I'm serious. We should do a whole month for him. I just like him as an
actor. I was saying the same thing. I was like, I would love to watch a month of what is it?
Pantoliano.
Yeah, but we call him Joey Pants. Yeah,
Joey Pants. That's him.
Yeah.
And do you know who Marvin is? Where he's from, by the way?
He seemed familiar to me, but Minnesota. I couldn't place it.
Beverly Hills Cops. He's Officer Taggart.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. No. The. I don't know. This movie struck the right vibe for me. I guess maybe I was entertained. Again, not doing anything crazy or anything, but I enjoyed it.
Well, let's hear from Zach, because he didn't say anything yet.
Yeah. What the hell?
Meh.
Meh.
No, I'm just kidding. No. I liked it all right. I think I said something in the chat, like, and I guess Dubs didn't watch it yet. And I was like, you guys feel like De Niro is like the right guy for this role in this movie? Because, and then Andy said, no, I think his chemistry with Grodin's good. And like, the first 20 minutes or so of the movie, I was really feeling like he felt really out of place in this. Then when he got with him, it got better. And it's like over the course of the movie, it's like, oh, I felt better about him being in the movie, because I think they could play off each other, and that helped a lot.
Yeah. Do you think it's more that, like, Andy had already kind of touched on it, but it's just that it's not the role you expect him to be in, so he's not quite acting like what you'd expect for a De Niro film, but then it's almost like you get used to it?
No, like, for me, the way I saw it is, like, this is De Niro trying to do a part he usually doesn't do, and it's not to his strengths. Like, okay. If you pitch his movie to me and said, who do you plug in that role, I would not put him in that role. I wouldn't even think of him at first. I was thinking, you know who should have been in this movie opposite Grodin?
Michael Keaton. Like,
Patrick Swayze.
No, not Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton could have been the Duke, though, I think.
Bill Paxton.
No, I would have said Sylvester Stallone. Or
That's actually good. I like that.
Can you imagine him getting all pissed off and shit at him and stuff, and getting really emotional like he was doing in the movie? But it's Sylvester Stallone doing it.
And he's got more. You gotta go. We gotta go back. I gotta take you back and give him money.
He's also got more comedy chops, I think, a little bit, like in those cornball like 80s kind of movies he's better in. I think he's a better fit. The other person I thought of was actually Bruce Willis.
Oh, Bruce Willis would have been good for this role. I think I would have liked that more than
Stallone. Than yeah.
Stallone. Cause I think the thing is that it's, you really need someone that can be that hard boiled egg. Like, I actually don't think De Niro is that bad for this role, but I can see where it feels like he's a fish out of water at first, but
yeah, I don't hate him in it. I just don't think he's quite right for it.
You guys are missing the most obvious one. Someone who obviously has the air of a cop, but is also a fantastic actor. Steven Seagal.
okay.
Oh. No, Steven Seagal would have just judo chopped the Duke and knocked him out cold and then taken him, no questions That's asked. Right. So would it would have been a 5-minute movie.
Would you have taken Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, I'll take Nicolas Cage in any role. I don't care. Make him Scrooge in Muppet Christmas Carol. I don't give a fuck. I'll fucking watch it.
Bruce Willis is my real pick for this. I was watching this. I was thinking, like, I feel like this should be Bruce Willis, not Robert De Niro.
I could see that.
That would work really well, but it would just make me think about Die Hard the whole time. Like, he would probably just be John McClane.
I'm watching this and I'm thinking about Goodfellas and Godfather and
Taxi Driver. Like, I mean, that's
I didn't think about those too much.
See, I think that's part of it. Is you're just seeing him in a role he doesn't usually play, and it makes it so hard because that's what you think of. And he doesn't act too differently than what he does, because Robert De Niro doesn't have like some crazy range in terms of how he's going to talk or anything. So I really think, for me at least, it wasn't usual seeing him at first play it. But I felt like, especially after he and Grodin started playing off each other, just all that went away, and I enjoyed it.
I don't buy him being quippy and having like smart-assy remarks is the thing. He's never really done that kind of thing.
Well, that's why I said he goes into the well of like repeating what the guy says and then get like really angry.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's been in other comedy movies like Dub says, and he's more funny in that stuff.
I think it's Grodin. I think it's Grodin that's like the weak link out of this whole thing. Because I think
I'm the opposite. I thought he was better.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Yeah, this is. I feel weird about De Niro being in this movie, but I don't hate it. But like,
I like them both. I thought it was fine.
I mean, again, I don't hate him, but like, just what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't know.
Just like that meme. You're not that guy. You're not that guy.
He's not that guy. But I still had fun with it. The bottom line for me though is like, for it's supposed to be like kind of more of a comedy, like Planes, Trains, Automobiles thing, whatever. I chuckled a few times. I didn't find it that funny. Like, I chuckled more often than anything. I was like, this was pretty good.
Yeah, I get that. I never like outright like belly laughed at anything. I chuckled a few times and that I moved on. But I do think later in his career, De Niro got better at comedy. Like, I've watched a few different later De Niro films, and his comedy chops are pretty good. So
he's maybe in all those like Meet the Parents movies, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, for that matter, the man is the king of comedy. That movie came out before this.
That movie wasn't funny.
Well, it is. I disagree. Actually, I think that movie's pretty goddamn funny. It's just also terrifying.
Taxi Driver is kind of funny. No, I'm kidding.
Are you talking to me?
Talking to me, pal?
That's not funny. I do that every day.
It's hilarious.
I know I made like a big thing about chemistry and acting and all that stuff, but I just thought, when did Andre the Giant die?
What? How I feel. 92?
I mean, shortly 92. After Hulk Hogan slammed him, right?
Yes.
He was never the same.
What if Robert De Niro had to fucking take Andre the Giant across fucking United States of America?
That would be fucking amazing.
Yeah.
He died in 93.
Okay.
You wouldn't even give a fuck if you could barely understand Andre. You wouldn't care. It's just him.
Oh, pretty dot. Okay.
This guy's an accountant. He's enormous. It's just.
Yeah. Joey Pants, by the way, in 1988, didn't recognize him until I heard the voice. I was like, who the fuck is that guy?
Oh, really? No, I walked right in. I'm a big Joey Pants fan.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Joey Pants fan, but I appreciate him. Like, I was like, oh, it's like, it took me a bit to recognize him.
Mm-hmm. There's a few roles that, like, it used to always be like, oh, it's that guy. It's Cypher for The Matrix. But then I saw, like, Bound and a few other things. I was like, holy shit, this guy's a good actor.
Yeah, no, I really like him in films as well. And goddamn, he looks like a used car salesman. I mean, again, he is being a sleazy bail bondsman. Like, that's exactly what he is. Like, he is perfect for this. He might have been the best part of the movie as far as, like, hitting what he was supposed to. But I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah. Andy, if you watch more of The Sopranos, you see him in it.
It's what? Really no way. Oh, okay, yeah. I'm excited then.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. He came and went. He's dead, I think.
Why you sure? Spoiled it for
did
me.
He,
thanks.
Did he call Johnny's wife a fat ass yet?
I haven't watched it in a while. I think so. Yeah, he He had the racehorse, right?
Yeah, he was like the accounting mob.
Yeah. No, he came and went.
Yeah.
We just lost everyone that watches the show because everyone was waiting to watch this.
Okay, yeah. When we talk about
everyone's waiting to watch this 25-year-old show.
You just ruined Sopranos for me. I haven't seen it.
I just said he's gone. I didn't say what else happened.
You said he was dead.
I probably, who knows?
Yeah, you don't. He's gone to Jesus.
You said he was dead. You said he owned a racehorse. It ruined everything.
It's a big plot thing in one of the seasons.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, he calls a mob boss wife fat ass. It's funny.
You ruined that too.
Yep, that's probably how he died.
Optimus Prime died as well.
Damn, okay. Well, let's just spoil more things in my life. All right, well, anything else to say about the movie? I mean, I think the one thing about this movie is, like, there's nothing that does stand out. It feels fairly cookie cutter for how many films that are like it.
It's like the perfect middle of the road. It's a pretty good movie.
Yeah, no, it really is. This is like one of those like 6 to 7 out of 10 films. It's like, oh yeah, I'd watch this, but like, I'm not gonna go and rave to everyone. Let's watch Midnight Run.
Yeah. If it's on, I'm definitely not turning it off. But if I'm looking for something to watch, it's not the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, it's the best in his Letterboxd review that he's not talking about.
Huh?
You said something about how it's like a TV movie, perfect TV movie. You just flip a channel.
Oh yeah, I was trying not to repeat myself too much, but yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, if we still watched movies on cable, this would be the perfect. Oh, Midnight Run's on. I'm fucking watching this. It's a pretty good movie.
Robert De Niro's in this movie. I've never seen this movie. You just sit there and you watch like a 2-hour movie because you've never seen it, and it gets you.
That's a negative.
2 hours and 50 minutes because of commercials.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it differently. I'll just say that. But
upside down.
Yes.
I didn't have commercials because I had Netflix, and for once they fucking had something.
Right? I honestly, this week I was like, I'm going to fucking cancel Netflix finally. And then we needed to watch this movie. I was like, are you fucking serious?
It's so random, right?
Like, I haven't used Netflix in more than a month, I know, for sure. And then here we go.
I got a question for you guys. The ending of the movie. Okay. But the ending of the movie, if the Duke never gave him the money, would you be pissed off? Because I would be pissed off.
Yeah, that'd be fine. No,
it just makes it better that he gave him the money.
Oh yeah,
honestly, it's one last joke. He had all that money the whole time, and they were like starving or didn't have gas or didn't have whatever. Like, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that is funny because it's like, but why put him through all that? But he had what he needed on him. Yeah.
I couldn't help but see it was $1,000 bills. Like, where do you spend $1,000 bills?
I know, but a taxi driver won't fucking do it.
So get out of here. So
what are you, guys?
I'm walking. Hey, you've got like, what do you say, like $30,000 or $300,000? Maybe you could spare a bill and like get home instead of risking getting mugged or whatever's going to happen in LA.
Yeah, he's like carrying it like this. So I'm like, fucking put that shit in your jacket. What are you doing?
He could have just said, if you just take me where I want to go, here, take this. And he gives him $1,000 bill. Shut up. Just shut the meter off, whatever. Just get me home.
That'd be the way to go.
I also want to like point out, like, Marvin's character is fucking funny as shit. Like,
yes.
Like him.
When he comes in and fucking hits De Niro with the door the first time and the other time when they're in the desert area.
It's like, even funnier the second time, I think, because it's like a callback.
Yeah.
That's a signature move.
He sold that door slam weird. It was like he remember he was complaining about
broke his ribs.
Well, he was talking about his ulcer or some shit earlier, and then it's like he sold it like he burst his ulcer or whatever. He was like grabbing his stomach. He's like,
I got an ulcer.
I just love how Marvin talks to people. Like, there's a fucking mob boss here. He's like, what are you fucking writing a story? Because they're like, he's like, who are you?
What are you doing?
Yeah.
I think my favorite part of this movie, though, was when they were at the bar and then they were broke. And De Niro's like, how are we going to get money? He's like, give me your badge. Just give me the badge. And they go in there and they do a whole counterfeiting routine. That was
the litmus test.
Yeah.
Litmus configuration. That's what it is.
To me, that was like the funniest thing in this movie.
Yeah. Again, that's also like right where he gradually starts to show, okay, maybe he is quirky, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's not a full artist. Like, I wasn't sold after after that started to happen. And like by the end of the movie, yeah, he just says like more and more things. It's like, oh, okay.
Those are all my favorite moments, is all the dumb like social engineering that the bounty hunters do. Like one of my favorite parts is when Marvin calls the credit card company and says, hey, I'm Robert De Niro's character. I lost my card. Where's the last time I used it? And they're like, oh, the Amtrak station. He's like, oh, of course, that's right. And it's like, now he knows where he is. And he says, oh, we better cancel that card, I guess. It's like, you motherfucker.
It's actually pretty smart.
There's a lot of things that, you know, we don't see anymore, like smoking on buses and trains and
shit. Yeah, they smoke on everything in this movie.
Yeah.
It's the 80s. Smoke.
Payphones. It's the 80s,
man.
Nobody knows what payphones are anymore. And the time elapsed from New York to L.A., that had to be more than fucking 2 weeks. I don't know what it
is. Also, the way they get there doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they go from New York to Chicago, you're already going the wrong way, and then they're in Texas,
then Idaho.
They go to Idaho, and then they go down to Amarillo, which is like you go south to go.
Yeah,
to Amarillo.
No, that's, they're like going the complete wrong. It's.
I was
every time
that
they said like, said where they were, I'd get more frustrated.
What the fuck are you going that way? Like it kind of make like if they're wanting to go some roundabout way and go to Chicago and then cut across to go to Idaho, maybe. But like, I don't get why you need to go to Amarillo.
I like how the film was self-aware because De Niro had a handgun and there was a helicopter there. Could have shot the pilot, but he fucking shot the rotor to made it go into the fucking cliff and blow up and be all cool and shit. And I was like, 80s.
Yep.
That part made me think of fucking in Indiana Jones' Last Crusade where they're getting chased by the plane for some reason.
I don't know why he didn't just shoot the guy. The movie's already rated R. Who the fuck cares?
We saw they exploded.
They wanted
I know, but that's like
a helicopter. That's like 80s.
Dying in an explosion is less violent than like a gunshot wound to the face.
Yeah, but in the 80s, it's more extreme to die by an explosion.
I mean, I guess it's cool and extreme. It's just I didn't understand like why they made it. It's weird. Whatever, fuck it. I don't care.
It's the 80s. Yeah. Everything was more fun. It was more volatile.
We didn't talk about how Dennis Farina rules, and we didn't talk about how Yaphet Kotto rules.
Yeah, he's in this movie. He's pretty funny.
I know we talked about mostly a little bit, I guess.
We just a little bit, yeah. The running gag with the him stealing his identity and shit, posing as him, is kind of funny too.
It's a funny actor to have in that role as well. I thought.
Yeah,
like he's dead serious the whole time too.
Right.
I did like the whole time that he's up on him. What in the fuck was that?
He's getting abducted right now.
Oh, no. It's coming for me, I guess. He's
getting midnight ran.
He's getting midnight run right now.
Run over.
The payoff for that whole thing, that this is one of the few things in the movie that did make me laugh when they arrested De Niro and had him in the FBI office there. And he was going to make his phone calls and shit. And he was like, you know, we could charge you for 10 years for a impersonating officer. And he gets to finally go like, well, you know, they could charge you with that, too. And he just kind of tears at him. Like, I was like, that was actually kind of funny.
Yeah, that was a good line.
Yeah, I mean, this film had its moments. Like, if this movie came on.
On TV,
maybe.
On cable, that's right.
There's this thing called Pluto TV. It's kind of like TV.
Yeah, I still watch it. Like, it's like fucking cable TV. Because I kind of miss cable TV in a way.
In a way.
We should just go back. Fuck it. Like they've already ruined everything. Let's just go back to cable.
They're adding commercials to everything anyway.
Yeah. Let's just go back.
Gotta go back. But like if this came up, I'd be like, I don't know, I've seen this already. Is there anything else on? And if there's nothing else on, I'd go back and watch it.
Very well. Well, I figure I'll probably watch this movie again someday. Like, you know, not next month or anything. But yeah, in like 10 years or something. I'll be like, oh, Midnight Run, this movie's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, I agree. I would eventually watch this again and enjoy it.
And furthermore, if someone hasn't seen it, I will definitely recommend it to them.
Agreed. I also recommend.
Yeah, just recommend. I especially like the 80s vibes it gives.
Mm-hmm.
Super mid-late 80s.
Oh, we didn't talk about the fucking weird-ass soundtrack.
It is.
Danny Elfman's, like, jazz band or whatever. Like, what the hell? Like, some of it is distracting, I think.
It's weird because he'd already done, like, Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Right, he'd already done like Danny Elfman music. So when you see soundtrack by Danny Elfman, you're like, what the fuck am I getting into? And then you start hearing the music, you're like, what the fuck? Like, it sounds like Danny Elfman got like some college students, formed a jazz band, and recorded the soundtrack. That's exactly what it sounds like.
So you mean it's just Oingo Boingo? It's just what it is.
Well, it's like Great Value fucking Blues Brothers at times.
Kinda, but, yeah. Yeah, it reminds me of that song.
Yep.
But who's picking next, by the way? Because I didn't know.
Debs, do you recommend it?
Yeah, I slight recommendation. Like, if there's nothing else on, I would probably watch it.
I'm picking hoping, next.
I was hoping you'd go, boo, I don't recommend it. Never mind.
No, I mean, like I said, there are parts where I'm entertained, but there's other parts where I'm like, this is a two-hour movie. Why?
Fair enough.
Because they didn't get to L.A. yet.
Yeah.
You know how long it takes to get from New York to L.A.?
If it were 90 minutes, you'd be like, they got to L.A. too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is unrealistic. Pissed off.
It needs to be an hour and 45 minutes.
You can pass time a little bit. You could go, like, wake up or something. I don't know. Mid-scene. But who's picking next? Wasn't it you, Andy?
Yeah, it's me. I asked if I could pick next. You guys said yes. Okay, so from that list, and bear in mind that all of those words that we fed to the AI gave us that list of movies, and one of them is The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. And I choose that because I like this movie, and I've been wanting to show it to other people since I watched it. So now you three mooks got to watch it.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Mooks to watch.
I'm not watching it.
It's a Western, but not.
All right.
Questionable Western.
You'll
see. It's like it takes place like at that end of the West kind of period. So stuff is still Western-y, but it's not like they rob a train or anything in it.
Gotcha. All right. So remember to watch that and then come back and we will discuss it. So let's
and
get
be
it
warned. Set aside a little time for it. It's a long one.
Okay, is it like 3 hours?
2 hours, 40 minutes.
Not bad.
Oh, okay.
Post credit scene time. Who's gonna go first? Chaz, should we go?
We talked a little beforehand. I've got a lot to do, so I can either do the Chaz show now or I can go at the end, however you guys want to do it.
Dubs, do you have anything in the last couple days to discuss?
I got my Switch 2. It's right here.
Well, did you play it yet?
I updated it, and I put a game on it. Here. Yeah.
No, it takes a minute. I understand. Zach, what about you? Did you do anything the last 2 days?
I just watched YouTube shit.
YouTube shit. Yeah, same here, brother.
I played Fire Emblem. That's it.
I played a teeny tiny bit of Mario Kart World, but I did watch the final season. This is the only thing I want to talk about, and then we'll switch over to the Chaz show. I watched the final season of The Righteous Gemstones.
Oh.
I know none of you guys have seen the show, but I fuck it. You what?
I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it. Okay. Maybe have we talked about it? I can't remember.
Maybe just a little bit.
Okay. Well, I love it. Did you watch the final season?
No.
Okay. It's good. I like it a lot. It's very funny.
It's pretty funny.
I mean, of course, the nature of these kind of shows are they have to introduce some characters to get the plot going, and they do, and there's some weird characters, but once you figure out how they integrate into everything, it becomes a very entertaining season. That's the weird thing about Righteous Gemstones is like the three kids are all ultra comedic buffoonish characters, but everyone around them is serious. Like John Goodman is serious, and all of the kids are serious characters, and all the wives are serious characters, and I don't know, it's just funny.
Is this the movie or show that has Danny McBride?
Yeah,
in it. Okay, I know about the show. I've just not watched it yet. It sounds like you recommend it.
This is big time. This is the show that he and the director something Gordon something I can't remember, David something maybe I can't remember the director's name, but he and that guy made Eastbound and Down, and then they made Vice Principals, and then they made this.
Okay, yeah, I gotta check that out then. Okay,
I've still not watched Vice Principals, but I'm told I'll love it. But I fucking love Eastbound and Down, and I think Righteous Gemstones is even better.
Wow, okay, that's you got me sold then, because Eastbound and Down is just amazing.
Yes, absolutely. So. And Eastbound and Down, like in my opinion, starts dropping off a little bit in the later seasons. Righteous Gemstones stays great until the final scene. Like it finishes very strong. So
okay,
I think that, I think they had a few things that they knew they wanted to end the show with, and mm-hmm. most of those things seemed to happen, I guess. There's one big thing, and it's like, oh, okay, this is the logical way to end the show.
Okay.
But it's very good. I highly recommend it, and you should watch it. Zach, you should watch the final season. Have you watched the first three seasons only? Or
I watched like the first two, and then I just didn't get back to it.
So you've seen the second season where John Goodman used to be a wrestler in like Tennessee or whatever? Yeah, okay, that's some of my favorite plot.
One of my favorite things ever came from that, which is like when Uncle Baby Billy was doing his pitch where he was selling whatever that crap was that turned into a meme, and he's like, well, I don't make any money from this. So by the time I pay all my scientists and all my marketing people, and it's a wash. It's just like,
he's the best fucking character on that show. What's his name? Walton Goggins. Uncle Baby Billy. In season three, he's pitching a new show, Uncle Baby Billy's Bible Bunkers, and it's just a game show about the Bible. And every time he says it, I laugh. Every time.
Welcome to Uncle Baby Billy's Bible Bunkers.
God damn it. You got to say the whole thing, Uncle Baby Billy's Bible Bunkers.
That sounds awesome.
In season four, he's pitching a new show about teen Jesus, and in a coke induced fueled like writing session, he decides Tangus, and it's the name of the show is Tangus, which is a part of teen Jesus. And people are always like, what do you mean teen Jesus? Or I can't remember what people call it. No, damn it, it's Tangus, like teen Jesus. Halfway through the show, like, they get this teenage kid to play Jesus, but he kind of sucks. And halfway through the show, Uncle Baby Billy goes, God damn it, you can't do this. You're fired. Get out of here. And he puts on a wig and plays teen Jesus for the rest of the season.
I'm going to watch this immediately after we record. This is amazing.
Good. I love the show so much. You'll like it a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I got
to
check
that
out.
That's all I got, though. I had to talk about Righteous Gemstones. I love that show. I'm sad it's gone, but I don't know what they're going to make next, but I'm in.
Okay. All right. Well, now strap in. Welcome to the Chaz Show. All right. We're going to get the big thing out of the way. We're going to talk about Jamaica.
Did you fight DJ? Yeah, I did.
I got kidnapped and taken to Jamaica. I got held hostage by Dr. No.
Did you smoke the ganja?
I did not. Did not touch
the devil's lettuce. Well, then why'd you go to
Jamaica? So I went to Jamaica because my daughter saw a movie that showed that in Jamaica there's glowing water, and she was like, I want to swim in that. So there we go. That was the whole premise of the vacation. So we did in fact swim in the glowing water. It was awesome. There's a lagoon. It's like one of four places in the world where the water lights up whenever you move in it. So we did that. That was cool. I got to swim and play with dolphins, which was super cool. Never done that. It was awesome.
You didn't get raped?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'd be scared of it.
I did not get raped by a dolphin.
Okay, cool.
The dolphins did sing me happy birthday, though. That was really cool.
Jesus Christ, okay.
Yeah, there's a video of it. They're going, it's really funny. It's pretty good.
But you're having a fit.
And so, they did better than I did just now. So, but one of the cool things I did that I wanted to talk about in the show, we went on a glass bottom boat tour, and then it eventually took us to a landmark spot. And I stayed in Ocho Rios. I don't know if you guys know this, but the very first Bond film, Dr. No, was filmed in Ocho Rios. In fact, the international airport there is called Ian Fleming International Airport.
Worth.
I got to stand on one of the locations where it was filmed, and just literally, looking right across, I could have swam there. I could have been right there toward the ending scene where he makes his escape at the end of the movie. So, yeah, it's really cool. Like most of the movie was shot in the exact cove where I was at. And that was really cool. And once the guy told us that, I was like, wait, what? This movie was filmed here? Because I guess they're used to like telling people that, and everyone's like, all right, cool, whatever. We don't know this. And I was like, no, I just watched this movie like within the last year. I love Bond. Tell me more about this. This is awesome. And they were like ecstatic to tell me about the James Bond stuff.
Where did Ursula Andress come out of the water at?
Yeah.
I want to go lick that sand.
Yeah. So, we talked a bit about that, which was really cool. But, so Jamaica was great. We had a fun time. Yeah, it smelled like pot in areas, but I never got a way to do that. But I did drink a lot of rum, like a lot. Actually,
you are in the Caribbean. That's what you
got
to do.
One thing that I got hooked on, and I basically did it every morning once I tried it.
Cocaine.
And it was like taking an Adderall. Is just their Jamaican coffee, Blue Mountain, just black coffee with rum cream. Like they have their own rum cream.
You were like, hey, this is really good. And then it was like, it's got rum in it. It's like, oh, okay, that's useless to me.
I was like, oh man, this would be great to have every morning. Oh wait, I can't.
And then it's like, oh, but it has alcohol in it. I'll have it of an evening. Oh, it's coffee. Oh, well,
Yeah. So anyway, I think it's one of those things that I wouldn't mind having on a day that I'm off and I know I'm not going to have to do anything, but I do have shit to do. Like,
what is rum cream? Do they milk a rum? Like, what is it?
It's rum cream. I don't know how they make it. It's magical, but it's effectively their version of Bailey's, but better. And there's
There's like a liqueur kind of thing.
And there's different flavors of it. And so it's not like super potent. It's definitely stronger than Bailey's, but not quite like. You drinking one of them is not going to make you legally drunk. But I don't want to be the guy that's known. It's like, oh, he goes to work every day after he has rum cream. But nevertheless, they make a chocolate flavor and it's amazing. Chocolate rum cream and black coffee changed my life. It was amazing.
Okay. Here's my question. Did you buy a bottle of rum cream to bring home?
No, I did not. And I regret it. Suzanne convinced me not to buy it while we were there in the resort. She's like, "Well, Yeah, they have a specific Jamaican brand, and I wanted to get both the regular and the chocolate rum cream because I could get them in small enough bottles to get them back duty free. She convinced me to wait because I would be able to get it at the airport. We get to the airport, the only alcohol, like rum cream, they have alcohol to buy, but the only rum cream or anything they have is just Bailey's. They didn't have Sangster's. So I've got to find another time to get it, but I'm eventually
going to get my hands on it. It's just sweetened condensed milk, rum, and half and half.
Oh, there we go. Perfect.
So we can and then optionally, you can add chocolate syrup or coffee or vanilla extract or coconut extract or banana extract or cinnamon.
Perfect. Oh, even better. We can experiment. Sounds like we're just going to experiment with rum and just find the perfect cream that I can have and not be considered an alcoholic and function.
Well, aren't you guys having a hangout soon? Just fucking do it then. Test it out. Guinea pigs.
All right, get ready. We're going to need a shit ton of coffee. We're going to go nuts. But, okay, I got more to cover because a lot's happened. In the time that I was gone, you know, between travel and just downtime, I also got to watch and play a lot of stuff. But before we get to those things, I'll quickly go over the card stuff. I have played in a couple of online tournaments for Pokemon since we've been off, and I've got top four in one of them, and I won another one. So I'm just still moving on with the Gym Leader Challenge stuff. And I even joined a new team for that. I'm now officially part of a team who focuses specifically on that type of stuff, and it's pretty cool. I've dabbled a little, but nothing much has happened, and it's disappointing. I'm still in that spot of I might be selling the stuff. I don't know what I'm doing. It stinks, but we're waiting. Worlds is this weekend, and we're supposed to get the announcement for the second season competition, so maybe that will spark things, but we'll see. As far as things that I've watched, I wanted to talk mainly about one video. I had gone down a little bit of a rabbit hole. So I remember I talked about the last episode, the 10 most important video games. Max Durant had done a video on that, and I decided to watch a couple other his videos. And I watched one that was called The Forgotten Final Fantasy, which is covering Lost Odyssey and how wonderful it is. And if you need any reason to tell you why you should play that game, that's it. It will also tell you about how fucking hard it is to actually get. But it's fairly hard. Like, because you can no longer just purchase it digitally, I think you have to have physical copy of the game.
Yeah, that's what I did. I just got mine on eBay. It was like $16.
Oh, okay, fair enough. But
this was a few years ago, though. This was like 3 or 4 years ago.
So I guess it's a little harder to get now, and also there have been issues of people, it's 4 discs, so even for Xbox 360 standards, like, that's a lot. And he was even talking about how to play the game, a lot of times now, if you try to get it, you may end up getting discs that are damaged. You can't play it. And
I did. I replaced them. I actually owned it 1.5 times.
So, like, that can be an inconvenience, but anyway, but it's still, it's one of those games that like very much deserves a way of getting it out of the entrapment it's in because of how amazing of a game it is. And you guys know I've talked about this game before at length. It's one of my favorite games of all time, so I definitely recommend it. But it was cool to see that. But then they had another video, which led to the other that I really want to talk about. So there was a video called The Greatest Tragedy in Gaming History. And he is talking about the... Well, that would be one, but the one he's talking about is the Panzer Dragoon saga that was lost on Sega Saturn. Yeah. And he goes on to how the myriad of issues and development and just the collapse of the Saturn in itself led to this hidden gem of a game. That did so many unique things, and because of the nature of how it was created and how it's been lost in history, it's almost impossible that it could be made into a remaster of some kind, but that he highly recommended it because of some of the philosophical tones the game gets into. It has a lot of depth for how short it is. Like, it gets into a lot. Just emulate
it or burn it. Who cares?
Well, sure, yeah. But it's just more about access to... in general, making it tough.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's virtually impossible from what I understand.
But he had mentioned how one of the big tones of the game, you know, covers fate and how you break fate, which, you know, a lot of common themes that JRPGs hit. And then within that video, he recommends a video called "Why Do JRPGs Always Have You Kill God?" So then I naturally was like, oh, that seems like a cool video. So now I have been introduced to Moon Channel, or Mooney, who is an attorney who does these in-depth philosophical videos on video games. And this video was something. But if anyone is a fan of JRPGs, or just a fan in general of the philosophy behind why a game would be made, or art, or you're a history buff, like you do like history or mythology, I strongly encourage watching this. I will say it's a lengthy video. It's almost 2 hours. The first hour of it is like very heavy.
What was that?
We lost Zach. See, he was like, oh, I can't.
He's gonna go watch it right now.
But the first like 30-45 minutes solidly focus heavily on Chinese mythology, the origins of Japanese mythology and religion, and kind of the cycle of Japanese history of how. And there's like this never-ending cycle within Japan of a promised false god or something that's going to bring prosperity to the commoners, which doesn't really happen, and then they're all oppressed in some horrible way. And then eventually, as the West brings influence, they get quote-unquote freed, but then now, and for like the last 50 years, what they've been under is a corporate false godhood who has kind of led this culture and social contract for those that live in Japan. And JRPGs effectively are, especially that trope of killing God, are a metaphor for the prison that Japanese society is stuck in. And God is effectively that metaphor for capitalism that they're trying to break through. Like the way he explained after going through everything and kind of even talking about his own interpretations of what the antagonists of Final Fantasy VII actually were, it kind of blew my mind because it's not something I ever tried to put to it. Like, I never thought that much further, but he talks about how much subtlety and nuance there is within some of those metaphors. And for so many of the games that I've played, it actually resonated a lot. So I thought it was a great video to understand that, you know, in the West, when a video game is made, maybe it is just this insurmountable challenge that you're trying to get over, but in Japan they're actually using this as a way to like express their displeasure with the current political state in the country, and sometimes even just retelling history of what their culture's been through over generations. So I thought that was really cool, because it's not a way I thought about it before. But anyway, I would strongly recommend that video. That said,
so it wasn't because of Nietzsche.
No.
Okay, I asked and you never answered.
No, so it wasn't. Although Nietzsche was brought up, actually, that was definitely brought up a couple times. Largely no, I guess is the way to say it. But maybe that ties in a little.
Here's a Max Durrett, the video's the most profound moments in video game history. Mm-hmm. Is good. the one that comes up is Metal Gear Solid 2, Sons of Liberty, the ending codex scene with the AIs and stuff. Yeah, too. But I brought this up to someone and they're like, oh, this is like almost as like someone saying we're living in 1984, man. I'm like, yeah, but like literally Kojima kind of predicted the whole misinformation internet thing. But, and he also does, what's that? That PlayStation game AI
LSD
auto something. Never mind. It just anything. It is. He has some good videos. I recommend him.
Yeah. No. Sure. I've actually that's one of the videos that is in my like list of things to check out from him. Otherwise, so there's a lot of videos there I wanted to get into, but it was funny. I went down a rabbit hole with the others. But yeah. As far as games that I've played, I've actually churned through a ton of stuff. Evie and I have played through Mario Kart World. Like, we've just been crushing it. We're beating all the cups and all the knockout things on 50 and 100cc. And we're
churning the knockout stuff. Those races are fun.
The knockout stuff is really cool. Those are my favorite races. We're getting through 150cc now. And she's actually keeping up. Like, she has auto drive on, but she's consistently finishing like in the top half of drivers for a 6-year-old who has basically never played video games. That's not too bad. I'm actually pretty happy about it.
Good start. But,
yeah.
Next game, Ninja Gaiden.
I can't remember. I think I was playing through Dark Souls when we last spoke. I don't think I'd finished it, but I have finished Dark Souls again. I have now Dark the Souls once again. But I finished Dark Souls Remastered.
Did you save it? Did you light the flame?
I lit the flame this time. I usually destroy the world, but this time I lit the flame. I was a good boy. But yeah, it was fun. I actually, this time I played like Glass Cannon Boom Boom Caveman. I literally just went around like wearing like basically nothing. It was just beating everything with a stick relentlessly. And I didn't focus anything else. I literally just went all strength endurance and just bam, 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 bam. It was really funny. It was a fun way to play it. But I had fun doing that. I played and beat Metroid Prime Remastered. Wow. And that was fun. That game is awesome. It was one of my favorite games on GameCube. And it was actually my introduction to the Metroid series. I hadn't played it before.
Same.
I mean, again, I have a different love for the other Metroid games. But this one is just like, again, it's my first one that I played. I really loved it when I was younger. The game was buttery smooth on Switch 2. It played so well. I scanned the shit out of everything and managed to finish that game 100%. It was annoying at times, but I managed to get everything. I went back to the Castlevania stuff. I'd finished one of the games on the Dominus Collection, and then I started Order of Ecclesia way back, and I got like an hour into that game, and I don't know what it was. It didn't click with me, so I walked away from it. This time I came back fresh. I started a new save file, and it was interesting. That game is, a lot of times I feel like Castlevania games, you like at first you find what thing feels right to you, and you kind of stick with that through much of the game, and then maybe later you find something super powerful. But you know, for the most part, you find the thing that works for you, right? Like which attack animation is best for you. And I felt like in that game, I didn't find anything early on that I really liked. I felt like it was kind of difficult at first. Like I was dying a lot and having to figure out how to, you know, really take my time to beat bosses. But then I hit a certain, like I found a set of weapons and spells that just, it flipped the tables. Like I just felt like I just became a god and I just started rolling everything.
That's how that game is. It's hard as fuck for like 3/4 of the way through. And then when you get to that last bit or whatever it is, the 2/3 mark, what I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was about halfway to a little over. Like I was 2/3 in and I felt like I was getting the hang of it. But then I just got a set of weapons that combined together were just insane. And I was like, oh, I'm just destroying everything. And what's funny is at the very first time, I didn't do the requirement to get access to Dracula's Castle. So I finished the game and just got the bad ending. I was like, no, wait, that... there's got to be more to this. Okay.
I did that too.
So then I figured out, oh, here's the real ending. And I did all the stuff and got the completionist on it. because I wanted everything. I did all the villager stories. I got the master ring at the end, all that. So, yeah, it's a pretty fun game. I actually really enjoyed it after that. And the story in it's actually really good. It's different than usual. At first, I didn't know how much I was going to like it, especially because what was different about that game was that you were going to different areas separately from the castle itself, and they weren't connected to each other. So at first I didn't like that, but later it made a little more sense and I got used to it, and it was fine. So it's definitely, I get why people like it. It's not my favorite of those games, but I did enjoy it. I'm glad I gave it the second chance. So now I've already started Portrait of Ruin, and again, very different because you're controlling two people at the same time. And it's a puzzle element to it. But I've enjoyed it. This one I did very quickly find like an animation style, like when I was attacking, that I've liked. So this one I've not had the same problem. It feels a little more straightforward. The story's picked up and it's kind of cool though, because the story directly ties into the Genesis game.
Yeah, Bloodlines.
Which is kind of neat. Yeah, it ties directly into Bloodlines, which is really cool. Cool.
That makes me want to play it.
It's a sequel to Bloodlines. I'll just spoil it. Like, it's a generational sequel. So yeah, it was really cool. I've liked it so far. But I'm only about, I don't even want to say halfway. I'm probably like a third of the way through the game.
That game's probably the easiest one out of
So. Yeah, once you get to you get these abilities, like special clash abilities, where the two characters like use most of their MP to then attack. And there's one that you get that certain bosses, you literally just two shot the bosses. Like, it's kind of trivial. But if they move around a bunch, it doesn't allow you to do it. But it's like 1,000 knives, and it made me think of when the Cactar in Final Fantasy, like 10,000 needles someone and just KO them. That's basically what you do. You just throw knives until they die. It's kind of funny. it's been fun so far. I've enjoyed it. So I'm glad I got back to those games. Because after I finished them, I think I only have... I need to go back and look as far as like mainline entries. But I only have like two other Castlevania games to play. And I will have played all of them. Whoa. Like, and beaten all of them. Which would be kind of cool.
Even beat the 360 one?
What, Lords of Shadow? So Lords of Shadow, I'd beaten. I haven't played the second one. That's one of the games I haven't
played. Did you play the DS one?
No, that's the other one I haven't played.
Did you play the arcade one? The arcade?
You have access to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you talking about the one that's like you can play with other people at the same time?
No. He's talking about it was in Japanese arcades a long time ago, and it is different than... The closest port of it is only MSX or something like that, but they included it on, I think, the DS collection. It's either the DS collection or the DBA collection.
Oh, no, I haven't played it yet, but I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, because it's got a different name, right? They remade it.
Dracula Castle, right.
It's like, technically its own game, so you got to beat that too. And did you beat Kid Dracula on the Game Boy?
Yes, not on the Game Boy. I played Kid Dracula on the Castlevania collection.
Okay, well, that's fine. That counts.
Lords of Shadow is the only Castlevania game that I ever beat. And the reason why is Hideo Kojima is a producer on it.
So what's really funny is...
fun. It's just a shame. Yeah.
It's God of War-ish, and they were like trying to do like the Shadow of the Colossus thing. I will say, for the time it was made, I really enjoyed that game. I liked the story up until a certain point. Like the cliffhanger ending twist of that game is kind of like, what? And
that was good humor, probably.
It's kind of interesting until the DLC just completely, it feels like it undermines what happens. It doesn't feel like it makes any sense. And then on top of that, I've just heard nothing but bad things about the sequel.
Wait, what about the Castlevania Gaiden on the Game Boy? It's like 2 hours long. Where you play the woman with the big boobies?
Sonia Belmont.
Oh, no, I don't think I've played that one.
You gotta play that one now. Okay, I beat it like last year or the year before, so it's fun. It's a fun game. You'll have fun.
Yeah. Anything that's on those collections I've played through, I'll have to look through and
see It's not on one of the collections because it's not canonical. They removed it from the canon.
Okay, y'all.
But it is on the Game Boy player if you have Nintendo Switch Online, so you do have it.
Okay, cool. So I have access. That's why I played it. Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I'll have to look then. Yeah, I'd like to be able to say I've beaten them all. So
you're close. I mean, you only got a few little wimpy ones to knock out, and you got it.
Yeah.
I've beaten every Metal Gear game.
Castlevania games, okay. Get on it.
There you go.
Only play Lords of Shadow. It's like saying I only played.
What's Dubs gonna play? Dubs, I think you should try Bloodlines. That game rips.
Wait, so I gotta ask because I missed this when I was abducted. I'm back. Oh yeah. By the way, we didn't talk about that part. I did get abducted. Liam Neeson saved me.
He got untaken.
I got untaken.
Detained.
You got returned.
Returned, taken, and returned. Dubs, did you make any progress on Ocarina of Time?
Just a tiny bit. I'm gonna go really crazy on it because I got sucked into a show and I binge watched 3 seasons worth of a show.
And that's cool. It sounds like you've got four days before we have to come down there and tar and feather you. So hurry on that.
Okay.
I haven't beat it yet either, technically.
What?
I'm kind of in the home stretch, but yeah, I technically haven't beat it yet. I have in my life beat it about a dozen times. Like I'm prepared, but I want to do the proper thing. I'm gonna beat it.
Shame brought upon your family.
The Switch 2 arrived and it had a new Mario Kart, okay?
Apologize now.
Yes, apologize now.
It's all good. It's all good. But anyway, I
apologize. I apologize.
You must there commit seppuku in the morning.
Okay. I have no other things to talk about, though. I hit all of my stuff.
Give me until 4th of July to finish it.
Dude, you're good. I'm just picking on you.
Taking until Labor Day.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, take as long as you want.
All you have to do is make sure you can beat Andy. That's all you got to do.
That would be funny.
Randy, that would be hilarious.
That's it?
Yeah, I think so. Wow. Wrapped it up.
Finally.
You made it sound like we were going to fucking go well, on here.
Andy then said, well, just talk about the things you want to talk about. So I cut out about half of the things I had to talk about. So
you're allowed to mention things. I did this. Who cares? I do that all the time. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's fun to be flippant.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, that's all I got. Cool.
Well, don't forget to set aside some time so that you can watch The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Just pronouncing the name of the movie, that's like you're like a quarter of the way done. And then make sure you come back and listen to us, and you can listen to us on iTunes and Spotify, Google Podcast, and of course you can watch us on YouTube where you get the first opportunity to watch. We even broadcast it live if you're a super fan. Dubs has got a game. He got Cyberpunk on the Switch too.
Yeah, he got the punk. It doesn't work. You're gonna have to return it.
Everybody flies.
Everybody T-poses the game. But anyway, make sure you come back, watch that movie. Yeah, that's it. Whatever. Like, comment, subscribe, send me a tweet on X and
fuck off.
Yeah, whatever. Reply to my comments on Reddit. Follow me on Letterboxd. Do that. Actually do that. I'd like that. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Send us a dick pic.
No dick pics. No, thank you. We're good.
You ever wonder if your routine is actually working or if you're just hoping it is? The Hume Band gives you real answers. It tracks your body 24/7, heart rate, sleep stages, recovery, stress, even blood oxygen, so you can see exactly how your habits impact your health. Not just steps. Real data. You'll start to notice patterns, like how a bad night of sleep affects your recovery or how stress is holding you back. And instead of guessing what to fix, the app gives you clear, personalized insights based on your data, so you can stop second guessing and start making smarter decisions for your body. Visit HumeHealth.com to get the Hume Band today.